Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Going to college is becoming increasingly difficult for the middle and lower class students. Between 2000 and 2011, prices for undergraduate tuition, room and board at public institutions rose 42%, and prices at private schools rose 31%. That's according to the National Center for Education Statistics. Students attending a public institution pay on average $14,000 a year, and those going to a private school pay $36,000 a year. With government support for institutions waning, students and their families are often asked to foot the bill. Student debt is now over $1 trillion in the United States. The interest rates on many new federal student loans doubled on July 1st from 3.4% to 6.8%. While student debt at graduation has skyrocketed by 200% since 1993, income growth has also stagnated. The cost of attending university deters many low-income families and students from pursuing a college education. So what can be done about this? On today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about what it means to get a college degree in this climate. Should we define the degree based on how much it costs? What about employment prospects? And what does getting an education mean to young people financially, professionally, and personally? Today, we're joined by Stephen Rose. He's a research professor and a senior economist at Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce. He's done extensive research on education, class, and long-term income, and has worked with the Department of Labor and the National Commission for Employment Policy. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Andrew Gillen, Research Director at Education Sector, a nonpartisan, nonprofit education think tank in D.C. Andrew studies the economics of higher education, including the cost of college and financial aid. He's also worked with the American Council of Trustees and Alumni and the Center for College Affordability. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show. Andrew, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to the show. So, Andrew, let's start off with you. Since you look or you have worked for the Center for College Affordability, is it safe to say that we're having this conversation in the first place because college tuition is so incredibly high nowadays?
Yeah, I think that's a main driver of why people are asking this question more and more. Because tuition's been going up for 6 or 7% for about 3 decades now. So this is particularly problematic because incomes are stagnating. So it's becoming more and more difficult for students to come up with the money to afford college.
And why is college so costly? I mean, we're having these conversations, or starting to, about the value of a college degree, but I'm still trying to figure out why college is so expensive. There's a new book out by Jeffrey Salingo. He's the editor at the Chronicle of Higher Education. His book is called Unbound, The Future of Higher Education and What It Means for Students. And he says in 2003, not that long ago, just two colleges charged more than $40,000 annually for tuition, fees, room and board. And nowadays it's over about 230 colleges. So, Stephen, why is college so expensive?
Well, things aren't cheap. I mean, just the bottom line in that university professors have had other options, and therefore all of these things come together. It's not like they're making profits on it. There's some concern that there have been too much spending on amenities like big sports teams, coaches, climbing walls. There may be a revolution on the horizon, and that is these MOOCs, massively open online courses. And so that could be a game changer. We don't know. I mean, it's still being tested out here and there, and we don't know that it'll be the equivalent. But certainly there's pressure to do something about it. I should say something there about, you know, when you talk about all these price gains, that's really what's called the sticker price. There's a thing called the net price, because Pell Grants are actually higher than ever before. And institutional grants, because, I mean, one can argue that high sticker costs are actually a good thing, because at the most expensive college, 70% of people are getting some form of aid. And the 30% that aren't come from very well-off families. And they've really increase the coffers for institutional aid. And if you look at the net price and you look at it as share of income, studies by the College Board, by Sandy Baum and others, have shown that the net price, as share of income, has actually not changed that much over time over the last 15 years.
All right, so you brought up a couple of things. But first, I want to stick with this question about why it's so expensive. And what would you say to that, Andrew? Why have the costs gone up so much?
Well, there's kind of two schools of thought on this. The first basically holds that there's some cost of providing a college education, and that cost needs to be met by some combination of essentially the student paying tuition and the state providing government funding. So there's a couple of things that could increase, you know, whatever that cost is. Stephen mentioned, you know, faculty salaries increasing, so there's some other stuff there. But the main argument in this school of thought is that if government funding is reduced, then tuition has to go up to make the difference. There's some truth to that, but there's also a lot of truth to the second school of thought, which is basically it focuses on the incentives that colleges have. And it turns out, for some reason, we've set up our higher education system such that we reward colleges for spending as much money as possible. So if a college spends more money, it can, you know, it can build better labs, it can recruit Nobel Prize winning faculty, it can spend more on marketing, and all these things will move it up in the college rankings. It can afford to fund more financial aid for, you know, academically stellar students, and all these things move them up in kind of the pecking order. So we've kind of provided an incentive for colleges to spend as much money as possible. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, one of the consequences of that is that they're always going to want to raise tuition.
What did you think about Steve's comments about sticker price and the fact that Pell Grants are actually on the rise?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's important to look at net price, not just kind of the sticker price. And the Department of Education has actually recently mandated that colleges include a net price calculator on their website. So if you're applying to colleges, you should definitely check out kind of the net price and kind of just ignore the sticker price. But the fact of the matter is we had a huge increase in Pell Grants. They basically doubled from 2006 to 2008. That's not going to keep happening. And what that means is that if we've got net price that stayed kind of constant, maybe it's still increasing from the numbers I've seen. So it's still increasing, and we've doubled Pell Grants. That means that when we don't double Pell Grants, you know, every 2 years like we have been doing, then we're going to see much higher net tuition.
And that's Andrew Gillen, Research Director at Education Sector. Stephen Rose is a research professor at Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce. And I'd like to welcome Eric to the show. Eric is a UC Berkeley grad who works at the Cal Alumni Association. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I understand you have just a little bit of time, so I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on, you know, getting a college degree in the year 2013? What are you hearing from fellow students about some of the challenges that they're facing?
You know, it's kind of a thing that it seems like it's sort of a necessity now, so it's something that, you know, you need to do in order to get, you know, any kind of job you desire. So whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it may be a good in terms of, you know, higher education just in general, but it is difficult for, you know, people who may not be able to afford it or just, you know, haven't been placed in good situations, you know, and don't have maybe supportive family structures or things like that. I was lucky enough to, thankfully, but it's not as easy for everyone else.
Right. And what degree did you graduate in?
I graduated with a BA in history.
Okay. And so what are you hearing from people just about their opinion of getting a college education and a college degree in this climate?
Well, kind of the opinion is that, you know, it's a necessity. Like, in the age in which we live in, whatever we want to do, just, you know, we realize growing up now that we're going to need a college degree for it. Like, it may have been different in the past, like my grandfather and my parents to a certain degree, but now, whatever we need to do, we need the college degree. So it's kind of a thing that we have to do, regardless if we can, you know, are in a good place to handle it or not.
And what was your job hunt like? I mean, what happened when you were in your senior year, knowing that you were about to graduate with this degree? What were your prospects?
It was not the best, to be honest. When I graduated, I, you know, I looked around for a lot of different jobs. I wasn't really at the time considering going to more school, which is always a possibility, but I was just looking for, you know, a nice job with some experience that I had gained, and it was rather difficult. And I worked a couple jobs that definitely you don't think of a college graduate working, but it was just necessary, so that's what I did.
Like what?
Well, my main job that I had, I worked in San Francisco selling hot dogs on the street for Stanley Steamers. So that's just one of those things. You graduate from college, you don't think that's going to be the case, but you need to pay the bills. You need to keep getting any kind of experience you can. So I did what I had to do, and I was lucky enough that that Cal grad who runs Stanley Steamers, Stan Roth, is a good guy and got me a job.
Do you have friends without college degrees?
I do have some, yes.
And what's the conversation like when you when you talk about these issues?
It's kind of a difficult conversation just because I feel like, you know, certain groups of my friends have kind of a chip on their shoulder if they hadn't gone to university just because, you know, a lot of just people now, they are going to college despite it even being a community college or just a smaller state college. It just kind of seems like the norm. So there's kind of like a divide between there. But at the same time, you know, they still get some of the experience that I've gotten just, you know, putting in hard work and just doing whatever they're doing. So it's definitely different in that sense. So it is kind of a chip on our shoulder, like I said.
Yeah. And do you have any debt?
I don't, thankfully. But that's pretty much just a result of having good parents. If I didn't have good parents that saved a lot of money for me, I got some scholarships and things of that nature. But we're able to pay everything off, thankfully.
And you work at the Cal Alumni Association. Is this a full-time job for you?
It is.
Oh, okay. Good. So you've got benefits.
I do, thankfully. And it's, you know, definitely something that I appreciate. And, you know, it's something that, you know, it's nice sticking around Cal just because I liked coming here. And, you know, it's a place for me to use everything I learned throughout college as well. So it turned out well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Eric.
Yeah, no problem.
That is Eric. He's a UC Berkeley grad who now works at the Cal Alumni Association, talking about what it meant to him to get a college degree. And we'd love to hear from you. What went into your decision? And what are your thoughts about what it means to get a college degree in this climate with a rising tuition, student debt, tough job market? And what will it take to ensure that those who want a college degree can actually get one? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Stephen Rose, you're a research professor and a senior economist at Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce. What are your thoughts about the conversations that we're having today about the value of getting a college education?
Yeah, it's a bit surprising. I mean, your last caller obviously was saying the word's gotten out. I mean, both parents and children, when they're in high school, really think that going to post-secondary is absolutely necessary. And going to post-secondary, nearly half go to two-year schools and get certificates and two-year degrees. So we shouldn't put that off the table. But for about now, the highest proportion ever of each cohort is getting a four-year degree. And about a third, a little more than a third of the people who get a four-year degree go on to get a graduate degree. So there's a lot of education going on. Mm-hmm. And what the data show, and the reason why it's happening, is that the returns in terms of employment and other things are just very high. So in terms of employment, you know, getting a four-year degree versus getting no post-secondary, a number of studies, including one put out by myself at the center, showed that it was $1 million extra over the course of a career. Mm. And then if you get a graduate degree, if you get a master's, it's another $400,000 on top of that. And then if you get a PhD or a professional degree, it's $600,000 to $800,000 on top of that. So the word has gotten out that, A, you're going to likely make more money. B, you're going to have the opportunity to get a managerial and professional job that has a high level. C, you're going to have a lower unemployment rate. D, you're likely to be healthier. E, you're even more likely to be married. So, I mean, there are just so many advantages that the overwhelming number of people are for it. And And if you look at people who have come out, so there was a recent government survey that asked people after they graduate, after, you know, they'd had a six-year experience in post-secondary education, was it worthwhile giving the cost? And 80% said, yes, it was worthwhile. And even two-thirds of those that didn't even get a degree said it was worthwhile. So there's just a lot of strong feeling that it's the thing to do.
Right. Do you think we'd even be having this conversation about the value of an education if tuition wasn't so high and unattainable for so many people?
I think it's the combination of this labor market more than anything else. So in earlier studies we did, the last time we had unemployment this high, the Washington Post ran a headline in June. Here's your degree, here's a job, here's the mop. And then, of course, we know that the people who graduated in 1982 from college actually did quite well. So I think the real driver is the very, you know, the deep recession that we've had, the deepest since the Great Depression, the deepest, obviously, since the end of World War II. What really gets hit hardest is new hires. And it's precisely those BAs coming onto the market. They've oftentimes worked. They've worked while they've been a student, but not in the kind of job that they want. And so that low hiring rate really makes, as the caller did, well, gee, I'll go work on a hot dog stand for a while till I get that professional job.
Well, what are your thoughts about that, Andrew, in terms of just how this conversation is framed about getting the value of getting an education?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, both the caller and Stephen mentioned that, you know, if you want to be in the middle class, it's very difficult to do that these days without having a college degree. So really, my best advice is if you can graduate from college, you should definitely go. The problem, of course, is that the graduation rates across colleges are pretty low. And in community colleges, they're even, you know, around one-third of students will actually graduate from community college. So this is depressing. But yeah, I mean, if you would like to better your kind of circumstances, a college degree is kind of one of the safest courses you can take.
So let's talk about access. I mean, what is being done right now to ensure that people who want a degree can actually get one? Andrew, are there any creative things going on across the country to ensure that happens?
Well, I mean, that's really been the goal of the federal financial aid programs for the past few decades, is to try and increase access to higher education. And to a large extent, they've succeeded. I think about 70% of students high school graduates are now going on to college. So there's access there. It's almost as though the emphasis is shifting from access to completion now at this point, because we've succeeded in kind of increasing access to such an extent that now a lot of those who have that initial access are not actually coming out the other end of the pipeline.
Okay, so that's interesting, because this morning NPR had a piece about this phenomenon known as the summer melt, which basically washes away the higher education plans of thousands of would-be students. Research from Chicago schools show that college plans of as many as 1 in 5 students who've already been accepted to colleges, quote, melt away during summer before the college careers begin. So maybe they come from a family that hasn't gone to college. I mean, I remember nobody in my family went to college, and you just have all these questions that not many people can answer. And if you don't have anyone to help you, you feel a little lost. And Stephen, what was interesting about this study is they found that when they had counselors available for these students during the summer months to answer these questions, so many more of these kids ended up going to college. But when they don't have the people around during summer to help them out, they kind of just say, I don't really know what I'm doing, or I don't know how to fill out these forms, and they don't go.
Yeah, there's no question that it's just surprising how big an effect family background has, whether your parents had a college degree or not. And a lot of people have trouble with the thing called FAFSA, which is the financial aid form. And that's so daunting that many people end up not doing it. So some people call it social capital. And the advantages that middle class people have and upper middle class, parents have for their children is that they, when they go to school, they have a bigger vocabulary, the young kids. When they have problems, they're more likely to get early tutorial help. They get with other people that have expectations. So there's no question that when you get towards the end of the pipeline, and there have been some encouraging numbers. So, for instance, in the last couple of years, the share of Hispanics that have gone on to post-secondary has really skyrocketed. I mean, most of them have gone to community colleges, but nonetheless, it's a much higher number than it had been in the past. So the word is getting out there, but, you know, there are just a lot of hurdles for people who don't have this social capital behind them and, you know, that little help of more counseling, that little help of, you know, having a program, having a mentor that takes them through those hard times can make a big difference.
Yeah, what about that, Andrew? Because I remember going home during the holidays and nobody knew what to ask. I mean, you're going through these finals, writing these papers, and no one had experienced this. And so you feel kind of lost. I mean, you might have great support with family who really want you to succeed, but it's difficult when people don't know what you're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's kind of most shocking is kind of that study you mentioned that they talked about on NPR was how little it took to kind of fix a lot of this problem. You basically had to do was send a few text messages that said, "Hey, remember registration. You need to register for classes this week," or something like that. And so these were just very, very little things that ended up having a huge impact on the summer melt problem.
Mm. Yeah, we're talking today about what it means to get a college education in this climate, and we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What determined your decision to go to college or not? If you have children, what are your thoughts on all of this? And if you know of programs that actually help students, we'd love to hear from you. And let's hear from Becca Hoekstra, who is a former intern with Your Call, who's now producing shows. Becca graduated with an AA in communications after 3 years at City College of San Francisco and wrote a column on education in the local paper. Hi, Becca. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
So talk a little bit about your thoughts about what it means to get a college degree in this climate, Becca.
I think really one of my major concerns is not so much, I mean, yeah, the cost is phenomenal and overwhelming, but even the education that's being taught there isn't really worth it. Like, a lot of higher education and education in general has yet to catch up with the digital age. Like, we're still using standardized tests, which are 100 years old and offer you 4 options as opposed to, like, 4 million, which is closer to what you get on using YouTube or using Google or something. This educational system we're using was built during the industrial era to impeach skills like obedience and the completion of repetitive tasks. And it hasn't really had a big upgrade since. And so that kind of, I mean, it does a terrible job at preparing students at all for the way the world works right now in the 21st century. Academic papers, like, are full of superfluous jargon, and they're really long form, and that's just not the way that people communicate now. Like, it would be so much more beneficial if we were learning, like, how to create succinct blog posts or something, and, like, not completely devalue academic writing or long-form writing, but there's a lot of value in being able to communicate now, today.
Becca, hold the line. We have to take a quick break, and I'm wondering if that was your experience at CCSF or if you're hearing this from other students, because I had a completely different experience where I felt like the education I got was incredible and didn't have to deal with any of the things that you just mentioned. So that's really interesting, and we'll continue that right after a break. It's Your Call.
Lots of ways you can join in today's conversation on Your Call. On the phone at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or you can send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll open the phones to get your response to the George Zimmerman murder trial. What are your thoughts on the ruling? The judge barred attorneys from using the words racial profiling during the trial. What role do you think race played? How is this case affecting communities of color? What was your initial reaction when you heard the decision? And now that a couple of days have gone by, what are your thoughts? Be sure to tune in tomorrow and call in for that. And then on Thursday, we'll talk about the state of Native American media. What stories do you want when it comes to Native American cultures and society? And what news do you get about Native Americans? That's Thursday. Friday, it's our media roundtable, and we will be discussing media coverage of the George Zimmerman murder trial. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about what it means to get a college degree in this climate. The fact is, the number of people getting degrees is on the rise when you're talking about middle and definitely the upper classes. But when it comes to lower class students, the numbers remain fairly flat. Students attending a public school pay about $14,000 a year. Those going to a private school pay more than $36,000 a year. You've heard by now that student debt is over the $1 trillion mark. It's tough to get a job. We'll talk about that in the next half hour. So what are your thoughts? What does it mean to get a college degree? What were the factors in your decision? If you have a child who's about to make this decision, what's the conversation sound like? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you work in this field or if you're a teacher, what are your thoughts on this question? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Stephen Rose, research professor and senior economist at Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce. He's done extensive research on these issues, including class and long-term income. Andrew Gillen is research director at Education Sector, a nonpartisan nonprofit think tank in Washington. And Andrew, what are your thoughts on Becca's comment that she just feels like, you know, money aside, she wasn't really getting the education that she was after. She feels like it's completely outdated.
Yeah, so until recently, a lot of the concern that maybe the quality of higher education was declining was mostly anecdotal. But there was an important book a couple years ago called Academically Adrift, and a couple of researchers looked at essentially a measure of critical thinking. And they determined that about a third of students made no progress at all in, wow, in critical thinking ability throughout their 4 years of college. And this is kind of shocking, because that is kind of the one thing that everybody agrees that colleges should be teaching their students, is how to think critically. And the fact of the matter is, right now it seems like there's a lot of colleges that aren't doing an adequate job of doing that.
And Stephen, why is this? I mean, obviously not all schools are created equal, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, let's look at a few facts on this. And first of all, the relative earnings, the earnings gain of having a BA are higher than they are, twice what they were in 1980. I mean, a lot of times you don't even realize what you get. And so, for instance, in that Academically Adrift study that they found that many people didn't have learning gains, the people that didn't have learning gains were those in business and STEM, the people who are making the most money afterwards. So it's hard to get a test that's right. I really think what's really driving things is the macroeconomy, that right now they're having trouble getting jobs. If we look in the longer term, if the future is going to resemble the past, we think, if anything, there's not enough college graduates. I mean, as you know, it's been on the rise, and more people are trying to go. And some are trying the path of through community college to a four-year degree, and that's a cheaper way to go. But we think there's room for a lot more to grow, and a lot of people don't realize what they learn here. It's very easy to say, you know, gee, it's just not what's on the tip of, you know, everybody's social media today, but it's... You know, all of these 40 different courses have stood kind of a test of, you know, whether you like it or not, whether you're happy or not, you've learned how to adapt to multiple situations and do minimally adequate jobs. And that's a kind of skill that is transferable to just a lot of jobs. What you major in matters a lot also, and getting a job in that major matters a lot too. So there are strategies to maximize your chances, but by and large, you know, 4-year degrees have been a big stepping stone to higher earnings.
Becca, are you still with us?
Yep.
What are your thoughts?
There was a study from the Georgetown University Center on Education that came out that showed that Americans with associate's degrees now make 30% of them now make up to 15% more than bachelor's degrees. And that's because community college especially are kind of very focused on producing skills rather than kind of all the other academic stuff, and that's kind of something employers are looking for. So they're, and I feel the internet has changed a lot just in the way our entire world operates now, and I'd really, really like to see schools catch up with that and integrate that into their kind of educational process and whatnot rather than keeping what we have. I think we need a major update, and I think that would really be beneficial.
And Becca, now that you're done, what are your job prospects?
Well, I'm basically looking for part-time work wherever I can. I am lucky enough not to have a lot of debt, but I have friends. Well, the student debt problem is just massive. When teens sign up for college, they have no concept of money. And we had no idea what we were getting into when we signed these papers to go to college, which is something we had to do when we were told we had to do. So, I have $5,000 of debt, and I'm not even sure where I picked that up. But there it is. I have friends going into the military because he's so scared that the bank is going to take away his mom's house because of his $80,000 of student debt.
Right.
It's terrifying, and it's humiliating that after doing everything right, after going to college and getting the degree and doing everything right, you still end up with less than zero. You're still in debt and you're jobless, and there's very little to look forward to
Well, Becca, thank you so much for calling. Becca is a former intern at Your Call. She's now producing shows. Once in a while, she graduated with an AA in communications after 3 years at CCSF, and we always talk to her about what it's like to be a journalist in this climate. Andrew, when you hear Becca talk about debt, I'm sure you hear that from so many of the young people you're in contact with.
Yeah, absolutely. The amount of debt that students are graduating with has been increasing, and just as important, the percent of students graduating with debt has been increasing. So this is definitely a big problem, and most of your readers are probably familiar with the statistics that now student debt has surpassed credit card debt for the first time, and it's really getting a lot of attention now, particularly because the job prospects for recent graduates are so unfavorable.
Right. According to consulting firm Hamilton Place, they have some new numbers out. Average student loan debt is about $29,000. That's for last year. Median income for new college grads is about $46,000. Does that sound right to you, Andrew?
That sounds about right on the debt. It sounds a little high on the income.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
$46,000 is a bit high?
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Well, thank you for calling, Becca.
Although Stephen might have better
sense. Stephen, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I did. First of all, you know, your first caller had zero debt. And it turns out that 35% of the people who graduate with a BA degree have zero debt. So when you hear that 29,000, that's the average of the 65 with debt. The median's a little lower. And I also thought that the earnings numbers were a little high, but just remember, you're expected to pay off those debt in, over 10 years. It's not like you have to pay it off over 1 year. By and large, the default rate is edging up. It's, too high, and a lot of people, especially those that drop out, and where a lot of the debt is a concern is in the for-profit sector. So in the for-profit sector, since they don't have the state support, they tend to charge more, and they rely very heavily on students going into debt. And that's a big concern of the Department of Education. So it's real uneven. A lot of people, it's, you know, in surveys done by after the fact, people say they're really happy that they went and the debt helped them. But a number of people, and it's a sizable number, fall through those cracks, don't get a degree or don't find that niche. And then they're left with this high level of debt. And student debt, as opposed to other forms of debt, isn't wiped out with bankruptcy. So this can be a really long-term effect, a negative effect for a relative, I mean, for a small slice of people. But nonetheless, it's a very bad situation.
Let's go next to Megan in Ben Lomond. Hi, Megan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So I just wanted to say that this conversation is absolutely perfect for me in my present life. I just made, or I'm in the process of making the decision to go back to school. And I sort of, the high school I went to, I was an honor student. I took all of the upper division, you know, advanced placement classes, and you're sort of bred when you take those classes to apply to a four-year university straight out of high school. And I wasn't invested enough, you know, in the high school to get help there in learning how to fill out the application process, and I didn't have the support at home. So I didn't transfer to a four-year university. Instead, I moved down to the Santa Cruz area and started attending Cabrillo College because it was, you know, necessary for me to do some amount of schooling to have my parents pay rent for me to live here. Mm. And I went to Cabrillo while working in town full-time for a couple of years, and then I just reached a point where I was sort of just, you know, going because I felt like I had to, but I didn't have any kind of direction, and so I stopped taking classes and just continued to work. And I managed a local business, and I was hiring and training, you know, people with bachelor's degrees and master's degrees, and I was managing a coffee shop. Okay. And I'm, you know, I was much younger, very little college experience, and I was, you know, hiring these people with tons of educational experience, and it just really soured me on the thought of ever going back to college, especially because I was making more money than they were. You know, why would I go back to school and then end up having to just work in a coffee shop anyway? And last year, I ended up with a really bad injury in my arm due to my work. So now I'm at the point where I can no longer continue to do the work that I was doing, and I don't have any kind of degree in upper education. So I'm just making the decision to go back to college because although I'm terrified of having student debt, I'm also terrified of just going out and finding a job and hating it, going to it every day, and always, you know, regretting not going to school to do something that I'm really interested in. Mm.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Megan. Thanks for sharing the story, and good luck with college and, you know, trying to figure out what you really want to do. Thank you so much for calling. I want to read an email from Anonymous who says, I just earned my second master's in a field that should have equipped me to enter the job market upon completion. It's more of a professional degree than my first in the social science field. Now I'm faced with unemployment, an extremely competitive job market, massive debt, and trying to survive in San Francisco. While education should improve one's lot in life, I'm not seeing the payoff yet for all I have invested in my higher education. The most recent degree was earned from an accredited institution completely online. In retrospect, this felt more like I paid into a big business versus receiving an educational experience of great value. I had to put a forbearance on my loan repayment since prospects do not look good for the immediate future, feeling disillusioned. Andrew, what are your thoughts on that?
So kind of the advice side of it is that I would really recommend for any of your listeners who are running into problem with their debt to look into that income-based repayment program. And what that does is it caps your monthly payments as a percent of your income. So if you have very, very low income, you basically get to postpone making payments on your debt. Kind of the bigger picture is that these are all kind of symptoms of kind of a growing problem. And to me, the continual increase in tuition is really driving the continual increase in debt and all the accompanying problems. Mm. So if we want to attack the problems that we're seeing cropping up with student debt, we should really focus on how we can keep tuition from increasing as fast as it has been.
Stephen, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I mean, number one, it sounds like that second master's was from a for-profit institution, and I brought that up earlier, that they have very mixed results, and they certainly charge a lot more, and you get into debt a lot faster. Second of all, again, I go back to the point that this is a very bad labor market for recent college graduates, and they keep on hurt, you know. It's very easy to fall through the cracks, and, you know, if you're an employer and you see somebody who's been unemployed, and studies have shown this very strongly, you're not likely to hire that person because you think, well, I don't know a lot about that person, but they've been unemployed, so probably other people know more. And then once you get in that cycle, it's very hard to break. And this person seems to be in that cycle, tried to get a more education, which was a good idea. The for-profit sector does a lot of advertising, and, you know, they're feast or famine. Either it works or it doesn't, and if it doesn't work, you just pay a lot of costs. So, again, it's just a tough environment, and hopefully, you know, in the next 3-4 years, we'll be looking back at this as a time when, you know, we're happy to be out of it.
Well, I'd like to ask that question to our next caller. Alan Colling is author of The Student Loan Scam and founder of the organization Student Loan Justice. Hi, Alan. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Do you think that we will look back at this in 3 or 4 years and say, wow, that was awful, but I'm so glad we got out of it?
I think 3 to 4 years from now, the federal student lending system may have lost all of its credibility with the population, and student loans will become one very large and very painful national joke. And I know Andrew probably has a good feel for the default data, so I hope that he can legitimize the following, which is that as of, I think, 3 years ago, the 5-year default rate for students was around 15%. Well, the most recent data we've looked at show a 3-year default rate of something like 13.4%, maybe a little bit north. Now, the 3-year default rate is a very small slice of all the defaults. And the schools and the colleges work very hard to keep those numbers down by giving forbearances, et cetera. So based on this and a wealth of other data that I could quote if people would like to come to my website and look at the articles and so forth and contact me, but, you know, the lifetime default rate is far higher than the 13.9%. In fact, I think greater than 1 in 3 is about what the lifetime default rate is, to the best of my knowledge. So that's a higher default rate than any other loan in our nation. Hmm. In fact, any other credit instrument in our nation, in our nation's history. And, you know, it blows right past Elizabeth Warren's exploding toaster threshold. And you just can't have a lending program that has a default rate that is that high.
Hmm. And so, Alan, how is that affecting the way people view getting a college degree in this climate?
Oh, it's horrible. People get thrown into default. It is a railroad situation. There is no recourse. There's not even a channel for protesting if your loan was defaulted improperly. That's sort of how strict this channel is. And the most disturbing aspect that I've found in the research that I've done over the years is that it turns out that the entire lending system, both for the old lending system, the FFELP lending system, but also for the direct lending system, the new government-owned program, these people have been making money on defaulted loans, not losing money. They've been making money. this is absolutely astonishing, unheard of, and unprecedented. You know, credit cards, when their loans default, they'll be happy to get back, you know, 30 cents on the dollar. In fact, that's really high for credit cards. Student loans, not only do they get back that 30 cents, they get back 100 cents, which is their entire outlay, plus 22 cents.
And let me just ask you quickly, because I want to get to a couple other calls, Alan.
Sure.
What can be done about this? Because the data shows people know, you know, people from low-income families want to go to college, right? How can that be? What can we do to ensure that happens, given what we're facing?
Great question. And I've looked at it closely, and I hope people will come to our website because it's a fairly long argument. But it comes back to returning the standard consumer protections that were ripped away from exclusively from student loan debt. It turns out that bankruptcy not only provides relief for borrowers, it also provides a very critical feedback mechanism by which price, quality of service, and other sort of market quantifiers are stabilized, regulated in the interest of both parties. So when you take bankruptcy away, the lenders don't care how much they lend. In fact, they want to lend more. Schools obviously want to charge more. But the federal government, in the situation that I just described, where they're making more money on defaults, they are the last line of defense, and they have been corrupted, and they've failed us, and they've allowed the colleges to raise their prices at double the rate of inflation or even more for the past 20 or 30 years.
And so, what is going to happen with the new federal student loans that doubled on July 1st?
That's really not that big of a deal. I hate to rain on anybody's parade, but, you know, the impact of that is something like $3,000 per year. $3,000 per affected student for the most heavily affected students, and that's over 10 years. So not a big deal. Mm. It's not the interest rates; it's the sticker price. And I would challenge. I think that's Dr. Stephen. I'm sorry, I forget his name.
Stephen Rose.
Rose.
Stephen Rose.
Yes.
Thank you. I would just challenge Dr. Rose.
Go ahead. Say it. Go ahead. Say it again, Alan. Did you lose Alan?
Be challenged.
I don't know what happened.
Sorry, I hear somebody.
Alan, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just wanted to challenge Dr. Wright because so few academic economists.
It's Stephen Rose. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Go ahead,
Dr. Rose. If he would at least give a thorough examination to my claim here, which is a quite dramatic claim, frankly, I'm happy to acknowledge. If he sees that the claims are true, then
all right. Let's get Stephen to respond because we don't have that much time. Stephen,
sure. I mean, I'd like to go to the website and see it. I mean, one of the things he's referring to is that the federal government guarantees the loans, and so when they're not repaid, then the federal government repays the banks. The federal program has a slight interest rate of advantage, and they charge a small fee, and they've been running a very small profit. That is, they are not losing money yet. I don't understand how you can pay more than 100% back and still be in default. I mean, you can with a little thing, but so default is not 100% or nothing. I mean, with the federal, with student loans, it's often paid off 50-60%, and that's why the losses aren't that large. It's not my understanding that the level of the 10-year defaults is as high as the Alan was making it seem. I mean, we don't see people lining up. We don't see the banks getting screwed. We don't see the federal loan program being in financial straits. So I'll have to look at the data, but overall, I don't see the outward signs of the kind of crisis he's talking about.
Did we lose Alan?
You're not going to see much public outcry by people who have been essentially scammed on their student loans for many reasons. It's a superb confidence scheme, quite frankly. Nobody wants to talk bad about their alma mater, number one. A lot of people don't even want to discuss debt problems with their own family members. And so, I think Occupy Wall Street was a pretty strong expression given all the things that go against public protest on this sort of an issue.
All right. Well, Alan, Thank you for joining us. We're going to definitely have to do another show about student debt. Alan Colling is author of The Student Loan Scam and founder of Student Loan Justice. But we do have a couple more questions I just wanted to get to before we end. And Oscar from Salinas wants to know, is there a significant difference in terms of career perspectives between attending an average state college and an average UC? Is this something that employers look at? Andrew, do you know?
I'm not familiar with the difference between, say, UC or CSU, but I do know that a couple of states have started releasing income data for recent graduates by program and by college. And there are some kind of fascinating results here. The most recent one was Texas, and they found that a Texas technical degree from a community college, meaning very vocationally based, like you're basically learning how to do a particular skill, those were extremely well compensated relative to even bachelor's degrees. Mm. Right now, I don't know if that's the case throughout the country, but I know that this was kind of an underappreciated phenomenon.
And where do you, Stephen, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the report that the earlier caller talked about, the role of community colleges, I was the main author of, so I'm very familiar with the data. It does matter what you major in. So on the one hand, you had some discussion about having a technical degree from a community college, and then you had someone talking about being a history major at a BA level. And, you know, then they can really line up very well. And, you know, so people, what we do, and we publish a lot of research on this, cew.georgetown.edu, and it's meant to be educational. You should still do what you love, but you should understand there are consequences. So one of the big differences between a CSU and a UC system is the share of people that go to graduate school. People forget that close to 50% of people who get a BA will at least attend a graduate school, and in the high 30s will get a graduate degree. And that's one of the main differences. It's hard to compare because the UC students are more selective, and you'd expect them to do better. So that's another advantage that the UC would have. You know, so you really want to adjust for the quality of students. But,
all right,
you know, it's a big system out there, and there's lots of options for lots of people.
All right. And hopefully, Stephen, we'll hold you to your prediction that things will be very different in 3 or 4 years.
I hope so.
Thank you. Stephen Rose is a research professor at Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce. Andrew Gillen is research director at Education Sector. Thank you for joining us. What was your response to the acquittal of George Zimmerman? On the next Jour Call, we'll talk about the aftermath of the verdict. Zimmerman, a man who identifies himself as Hispanic, was charged with second-degree murder in the killing of unarmed black teenager Trayvon Martin in Florida last year. The judge barred attorneys from using the words racial profiling during the trial. What role did race play, and how is this case affecting communities of color? What's your reaction? It's Jour Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Jour Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Jour Call is produced by KALW. In San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.